You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We are ready to get started. Start us up. Here we go. 3 hours coming your way this evening here on TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards, and welcome to September. Fall is right around the corner. Summer in the rearview mirror, and I can't wait to take it into the last 4 months of what has been, what is, and what has been, perhaps, our best broadcasting year to date. I know we say that every year, but every year we do want to get a little bit better. And this has been another year where we have synthesized the mainstay guests along with guests who are making debut appearances on the program, some special broadcasts from the road again. And speaking of some of those first-time guests, how about Jose Nino last week? And then earlier in August, A Little Apostate. We have had some great time with the first-timers as well as those you hear per annum. And we've got three of those coming your way this evening, ladies and gentlemen. As we turn that corner and head into autumn, I want to make the last 4 months of this year unforgettable as we power into the future here on TPC. So here's what's coming up tonight. Allow me to set the stage for you, if I could. Joining us on the program this evening, in fact, in the very next segment, is the one and only California State Professor Emeritus, Dr. Kevin McDonald. He's back on the show to discuss the psychology of self-hating whites. Now, we love Kevin McDonald, and as we inch ever more closely to our 20th year anniversary, we've been talking about, now that's coming up in 2024, so it's not next year, but it's close enough now to where it's on my radar. And we've been talking the last couple of months. You've heard us mention some of the top five guys, the people who have logged, the men who have logged the most appearances, those five men. And you heard from one last week, Sam Dixon. Tonight, Kevin McDonald, he's another one. To have been appearing on this program so consistently over the course of nearly two decades, that is a wonderful fraternity, and we're so thankful to guests like that who provide us with their talents and continue to appear to this audience. And they've, of course, become so much more than guests over this time that we toil in these vineyards together. They are, in fact, very close and dear friends. But Kevin McDonald's coming up in just a moment. In the second hour, Ramsey Paul will be with us to break down Joe Biden's speech. What was that all about? Did Joe Biden just declare war on Middle America? We'll talk to Ramsey Paul about that. And then I'm really looking forward to a conversation we're going to be having in the third hour with international corporate attorney Bill Johnson. He's going to be on from Los Angeles to discuss what a geopolitical Russian alliance with China and Japan might mean for the West. Now, if you don't know this about Bill, Bill has been a lifer in our cause, but you may not know that he is a corporate attorney with a great deal of interest in Japanese clients and in Japan, and he is fluent in Japanese. And I heard him on a live stream earlier this year in which he was talking about this question, and I put it in the back of my mind, and I said, the next time we have a chance to get Bill on, I want to talk to him about this. And that was several months ago, but we're going to take care of that tonight. And so that's the three that we've got coming your way: Kevin McDonald, Ramsey Paul, and Bill Johnson. Some great guests coming up throughout September. A terrible night for Keith Alexander to miss. So Keith Alexander, well, look, folks, I'll just level with you. It's Ole Miss's home opener, so Keith is down in Oxford. But there were some stories in the news that were absolutely tailor-made for Keith, including the fact that Jackson, Mississippi, which now has this black nationalist mayor, he's been in charge for a while now. Well, we know that they built the pyramids, of course, but they can't keep running water in cities that they administer here in the United States. And so Keith was just, boy, could he have sunk his teeth into that. We're going to have to put that on ice. We'll get it next time Keith's on. The Bank of America thing, where Bank of America is giving you zero down and zero closing costs if you're black, that's not racist, though, or race-based discrimination at all, naturally, because whites are the victims, so therefore it can't be. And then Frody Midyard. I had the opportunity to appear with Frody on his film festival that he does, his annual film festival. And last year, we talked about the film Predator, and of course, Sonnyland, and one of the stars in that movie was a big friend of ours and a regular guest in his own right until his untimely passing a few years back. But Frody has just done a review of A Time to Kill. He calls it Hollywood's most blatant piece of anti-white propaganda. And Keith actually went to law school, I think, with John Grisham. So he knows a little bit about that story. And that was a true story. Did you know that that was a true story in A Time to Kill? The only thing that they got mixed up was the races were reversed. It was, in fact, a black-on-white crime rather than a white-on-black as portrayed in the movie. Well, Frody just did a review on that, and Keith, we're going to try to get Frody on. We're going to try to get Frody on this month so he and Keith can break that down. And Brother Nathaniel's lined up for this month. I haven't talked to him in about a year. He's going to be on September 17th, so a lot of things coming on. Now, I want to tell you one more thing. Then we're going to go to the break, and I understand Mr. Producer just told me that Kevin McDonald is already waiting, so we're testing out a new system, a new guest system that we've used primarily for international guests, but then we discovered, hey, why not use it for domestic guests as well? It's a hands-free deal, so they don't just hold the phone to their ear for an hour. And Kevin is already there, so we're going to get to Kevin directly after this break. But I just want to let you know one more thing. I tried to paint this verbal picture for you last week, ladies and gentlemen, and we just ran out of time. But if you've been to the mailbox this week, you'll know that TPC's third quarter fundraising initiative is underway. And the details of this particular drive and its incentive are in the mail if you're a regular donor to the program. And we had a great time, as we always do, putting these things together. So what was going on in the Edwards home about a week and a half ago, my wife and I were sitting at the coffee table. We were folding the letters, and then we would hand them to our one-year-old. She'll be two in October, and she was ferrying the letters over to my brother, who was putting the labels and the stamps on the envelopes, and then they were passed over to my cousin, who was dealing with the stuffing and sealing of the envelopes. So it was a full family operation, as it always is and as it always has been for these last 18 years, to get the quarterly newsletter and fundraising appeal out. And I think we've got a wonderful incentive gift for you, ladies and gentlemen, if I do say so myself. And we didn't want to let the cat out of the bag last week, but now that we're officially underway, for those who want to hear more good news, why we should be optimistic, reasons for optimism, well, you can get that. If you donate at the level that triggers the fundraising incentive, you're going to receive a DVD video. And you'll receive a copy of this DVD that includes not one, but two uplifting and informative speeches. Yes, indeed, folks, it is a TPC double feature. Now, these speeches took place at the League of the South's annual conference a little bit earlier this summer. And wouldn't you know, the two speakers that we chose, that we selected for you, are two of TPC's top five guys. Sam Dixon's recent speech, Why We Should Be Optimistic, and the aforementioned Dr. Kevin McDonald and his speech, Confronting Jewish Power. We'll be back with Dr. McDonald right after this. Here we go. Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog, with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, the Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at AntelopeHillPublishing.com. That's AntelopeHillPublishing.com.
I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to antelopehillpublishing.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast. And that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Well, folks, as I was just telling you, we promise you a September to remember here on this radio broadcast, and I can't think of a guest any better to kick off any given month than Dr. Kevin McDonald, a former professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, the author of several books we've talked about over the many years he's been appearing. Cultural Insurrections and Individualism and the Western Liberal Tradition are among them, and he's back tonight to talk with us primarily about the psychology of self-hating whites. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Kevin, how are you doing tonight? I know we had Kevin just there.
I'm sorry. I muted the microphone. Sorry.
There you go. No problem. And listen, you're coming in with crystal clear audio clarity, my friend. How are you?
Okay, good. Sorry about that.
No problem. Well, listen, I want to get to it all, but first, do you have a take on Biden's speech? That certainly seems to be the talk of the town and of our ranks as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was very intensely negative about the Trump voters, which, of course, are almost all white. And I think it's because Biden, the Democrats really don't have any big issues to run on. I mean, they can't run on inflation, the economy, crime in the cities, the border, any of these things. And so what they're trying to do is scare the hell out of people. And, you know, the people, if you take what Biden's saying seriously, you know, if you vote Republican, fascism's around the corner, you know, horrible things. I think it's a fear campaign. And I think that's their message for the midterms, sadly.
Kevin, I think you're exactly right. And as a matter of fact, I had this thought in mind that I bookmarked, and I need to put this up on Twitter before I forget it. But I saw through this. I mean, this was a transparent ruse. This was, you have no issues, so you need to make the midterm elections about anything other than the economy and the rampant inflation and the cost of gas and the cost of groceries and of what the Republicans won on a couple of years ago, critical race theory and transgenderism and all of that. So yeah. If you sort of recalibrate this whole thing with, of course, the controlled press as serving as your mouthpiece, and you make it, hey, if you don't vote for us, your rights and liberties and blah, blah, blah are going to be taken away. And they give the Republicans way too much credit. The Republicans aren't nearly cool enough for any of that. but that's what it's all about at the end of the day, politically speaking, and that will actually segue into what we brought you on to talk about. But yes, I think you and I are in agreement on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a fear campaign, and you know, they're well aware that the COVID fear campaign totally worked, and they can, you know, gin up this panic. In this case, it's what you call a moral panic. You know, it's a panic that, oh my gosh, you know, if this happens, it's the end of the world. We got the second coming of Hitler, and you know, it's just the end of everything. If you take a look at these Republicans, yeah, it ain't going to happen that way. But you know, that's the pitch. And, you know, sadly, I look on, you know, sort of liberal Twitter accounts, and they buy it totally. I mean, totally buy it. And you see some op-eds now saying, yes, it is fascism. And that's really what it is. And so we have to. But yeah, the entire establishment's been in complete meltdown since Trump got elected. I mean, you've had investigation after investigation, and it's really motivated, I think, by his comments on immigration the effects of immigration, that Brussels isn't Brussels anymore, and things that Mexico is not sending their best, and you know, really cutting down and wanting to cut down on legal immigration. I think that is just, that's a dagger to the heart of the establishment. They can't, you know, that's just the end of the world. And so they have pulled out all the stops. And now with this document thing with Mar-a-Lago, and, you know, but it's one thing after another. And I do think that if they didn't have that, they'd have something else. And they'll keep going. They just can't have him running. They can't have him winning again. That would be, that really would be, you wouldn't believe the anger, the hostility, and the absolute trauma that would cause on the left.
I think the best case scenario fantasy for us was that they would be so apoplectic that they would be the ones to secede and save us the trouble of it all. That's probably a wishful thinking on our part, but hey, you never know. History is still unwritten, as the cliche goes. But yes, I mean, going back to Trump when he first got in there with the Russiagate hoax, and then the three impeachments, and January 6th, the Mar-a-Lago, and now all middle American Trump voters are Hitler. I mean, it's just, it's entirely fanciful, but that's what they want the discussion to be about, rather than, again, the economy is stupid. But we'll talk more about that with Ramsey Paul in the second hour. But right now, let's talk about the whites who cheered Biden's speech, Kevin. And that's what we're here to talk about, the psychology of white self-hatred, those who would cheer it. I mean, you literally practically wrote the book and coined the term, as far as I'm concerned, with regards to pathological altruism. Let's take a quick refresher's course, maybe 60 seconds or less. Give us the definition of pathological altruism and how it applies to those who are cheering Biden's attack on their own people.
Yeah, pathological altruism is when you do things that help other people that also hurt yourself. So it's altruism. But it's pathological when it gets to the point that it really starts to harm your vital self-interest. And so, you know, there's experimental data on this sort of thing where you have, you know, say the wife of an alcoholic husband, and he beats her, and he just can't, and she just feels, well, I have to take care of him or something. And it just keeps happening. And so you see these people. But I think, it is sort of a mass phenomenon among whites now, that they feel they need to do this, and they're very willing to punish other white people. And it's one of the things that experimental data has shown, that individualists, when we Westerners are individualists, we are willing to punish other people, even at cost to ourselves, if they violate moral norms. And so these people are, you know, they're happy to have us locked up or do anything, because we have transgressed these absolutely sanctified moral precepts regarding how you talk about race, how you talk about immigration, how you talk about these basic issues. So that's pathological. It's pathological because in the long run this will result in absolute disaster for white people. And they don't see that, what it's already happening to their children. You know, they can't get into a college, university they want to. They're going to be passed over for promotions and for getting jobs. And it's already happening, for sure. But these people, they don't mind punishing whites, other whites, even innocent whites, because of the past supposed sins of racism. So,
well, they don't even mind punishing their own children and helping facilitate and go about creating a world that will absolutely hate and seek to destroy their own children. You know, we were talking a moment ago that the fundraising incentive for our third quarter Drive is this double feature DVD featuring remarks delivered by both you and Sam Dixon. I can remember something Sam Dixon said on this program maybe back in 2005, 2006, and I've never forgotten it. He was quoting a Greek maxim that said, all things in moderation, nothing in excess. So that means, of course, even something that's a virtuous, like being kind and charitable and philanthropic, when taken to an illogical extreme, it can become harmful, and that's what we've got here.
These are very nice people. And they want to do the right thing, but they're willing to throw common sense out the window and punish people like themselves for, you know, because of what they hear in the media and what they establish as this moral community. I mean, that's really the basis of white society, the moral society are these moral communities. We don't operate on the basis of kinship anywhere near like other people. That's what individualism is all about. But, you know, so our social glue are these moral communities. And if you get outside it, anything goes. You know, if you look at even the old Icelandic communities, if you commit a serious transgression, you are going to die. They're not going to let you back in. They will execute you, or they will simply not let you back in to the group. And so it's an evolutionary dead end. And so it's a very, very serious thing. And it's pervasive in our culture, and no other culture, by the way.
Well, I actually want to pick up with you on that, by the way, already, just one segment in. Another fascinating and absolutely riveting discussion with Kevin MacDonald. I've got some very good questions for him. And questions worthy of someone of his intellect and talent and ability. We will get to them, but I want to pick up right after these words, right where we're leaving off. Why have whites been so susceptible to this condition in ways that other races have not been? We'll get his answer on that, and then we'll keep on trucking. The great Dr. Kevin MacDonald, a national treasure he is. He's back right after this.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
The Biden administration wants Congress to approve an arms deal that is worth more than $1 billion to Taiwan. It's due to increased tensions with China over the island nation's status. The State Department has signed off on three separate proposed deals on Friday. If approved by Congress, the deals will send contractor logistics support for Taiwan's surveillance radar program, plus missiles along with related equipment. A spokesperson for the State Department says the U.S. being able to provide defense weapons to Taiwan quickly is essential to the island's security. The Russian-controlled Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine has been disconnected to its last external power line. But the head of a U.N. nuclear watchdog says that the plant was still able to run electricity through a reserve line amid sustained shelling in the area. This is USA Radio News.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our health care. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly health care costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with health care costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 29 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
For the second time in a week, NASA has scrubbed the launch of its crew capsule into lunar orbit. A fuel leak is the cause of Saturday's launch being canceled. Earlier in the week, escaping hydrogen was to blame. No word on when NASA might try again. Bill Nelsa, the agency's administrator, says they'll go when it's ready.
We don't go until then, and especially now, on a test flight, because we're going to stress this and test it. And test that heat shield and make sure it's right before we put four humans up on the top of it.
If extensive repairs are needed, the capsule could be in the hangar until October. Corey Wayne Patterson took off into charges of grand larceny and making terroristic threats for stealing an airplane and circling the skies of northern Mississippi Saturday morning. He could face federal charges on top of that. At one point, Patterson threatened to crash into a Walmart in Tupelo. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Back with Kevin McDonald. I was listening to the news break there just a moment ago. That's another topic of conversation we'll probably have. We don't have time to have it tonight, but next week. This whole thing with NASA. I mean, we should have been colonizing the stars by now. The height of the American space program came with Wernher von Braun. And, I mean, after we substituted the pursuit of excellence for the pursuit of equality, it's just been all downhill, and it's just a joke now. But anyway, back to the topic at hand with the esteemed Dr. McDonald. You know, Kevin, it was going very well for whites for a very long time, up into the early part of the 20th century, certainly in the 19th century. Whites pretty much dominated the globe. And then all of the sudden, around the middle of the last century, we started running in pace and running on a treadmill and, in fact, going backwards. So I know that this condition we're talking about, this mental illness, this pathological altruism, the psychology of white self-hatred, it had not been afflicting us up until the last couple, three generations. But the question still remains, why have whites been susceptible to this condition in ways that other races have not been? And why did it manifest itself when it did and not earlier?
Well, it's certainly a cultural phenomenon. As you say, this is not something that has characterized white people forever. When I was growing up, I have to say I was quite proud of being white. I wasn't really conscious of it up in Wisconsin there. But I certainly was. And I don't think it really was, you know, it's been accelerating lately. Probably beginning the Obama administration, really taking off. But it's been going on a long time, a lot longer than that. So we have to have a cultural explanation. But at the same time, we have to think of why white people? You know, we are unique. And my view, as I wrote a book, Individualism in the Western Liberal Tradition, that it's really about individualism. As I said before, individualism is unique among all the peoples of the world. Other people are far more involved in kinship relationships and that sort of thing. White people are much more individualistic, and our moral sense is within a group, but, we have these moral communities. This evolved in the far north of Europe, especially in the far north of Europe. And the idea was that there were very small groups, family groups. They didn't have extended kinship groups like you see in the Middle East, where, you know, everybody sort of knows their place in the big kinship picture, and people marry their cousins and all that. In northern Europe, people married their on the basis of personal attraction. What's your personality? What's your intelligence? Are you a good person? Can I live with you? That kind of thing is going to be, those kinds of things are going to be important for marriage choice. So it's a very different ballgame. And in my book, I really emphasize family structure. Our prototypical family structure is nuclear family, mom, dad, and the kids, separated from the wider kinship group. So it's very different. But part of that, is, again, the emphasis on moral communities. And the idea is that individualism is associated with low ethnocentrism. So we are the least ethnocentric people in the world, and we're paying for that now, I guess. It's not working out now. Why is it not working out? Because what's happened is that the culture has been taken over by people who hate us, frankly. That's my whole writing on Jewish activism. So what we see, beginning really the gradual taking over of almost all the media, beginning in the 1920s and 30s, Hollywood studios were completely Jewish, still are. Whatever the ownership is, the people running Hollywood are still Jewish, and so the messages coming out of Hollywood are things that Jews approve of or not at least do not radically disapprove of. But, it went down when I was growing up. We had three TV networks. All of them were owned by Jews. The big newspapers, New York Times, was owned Jewish. In those days, the Washington Post was owned by a Jew. And so the media was taken over. And so what happens is that humans are very different from animals. We have some very evolved tendencies. Ethnocentrism is one. Fear and other emotions are sort of hardwired in us. But humans, far more than any other animal, we have what we call top-down processing. We get information from the environment. It goes through the higher brain centers, the prefrontal cortex. And then the prefrontal cortex has inhibitory connections to the lower part of the brain. So you can inhibit these more primitive, fundamental, evolved emotions, like ethnocentrism. And they've actually done studies of that, where you have people, you have experimental subjects, white people, white college students, and you tell them they have to make some choices about black people. It depends on how long it takes them to decide this. And so then when they first do it, they do it very quickly. But then the experimenter tells them, on the basis of this, you're a racist. You're kind of a racist. Well, that sort of, shames them. Oh, God, horrible. And so then they do it again. And what happens is that the people doing this experiment slow way down, and they are able to inhibit those responses. And that's really what's happening here. Is that, you get these messages, and we're getting them now 24/7, whether you turn on the television for the ads, whether you go to school, kindergarten, all the way through university, whether if you're working at a company that will do diversity seminars and bring in critical race theory and all about white privilege and all of that. And the other aspect of individualism is that we are prone to guilt more than other cultures, way more than other cultures. Some people, Peter Frost, who's a professor at a Canadian university, he argues persuasively, as far as I can see, that guilt is unique among Europeans, among Western Europeans, that other cultures will operate on the basis of shame. That is, they're concerned what other people think, that they're not going to look good in the community. But guilt is internal. You are guilty no matter if anyone's around. You did it, and nobody saw you do it, but you still feel horrible about it. You feel guilty.
That's interesting.
And we are very prone to that. And I think that's really what the self-hatred comes in. I mean, we're getting wall-to-wall propaganda. And it's because of these media messages, but that it interacts with our evolved psychology. That is the psychology of top-down processing, being able to inhibit our emotions. I mean, humans are able to, you have a situation where you have some kind of reward, and you can say, the experimenter says, well, if you wait 20 minutes, half hour, I'll give you twice as much. And you do this with children. Well, kids who can really delay that, and what they call delay gratification, that means they're inhibiting this impulse. The impulse is to go for it right now. And impulsivity is one of the big drawbacks in our culture. And of course, black people are much higher in impulsivity than white people. And what that means is, you don't have any money. You're going by Bass's liquor store, and you say, "I'm going in there and getting some money," you don't think about the long term here. That you're going to be caught on camera. The cops are going to come up, and all this. So you don't think about the future. It's what they call time discounting. You're not interested in something that's going to happen 5 years from now. It doesn't even good on your radar, but for a good middle class person, you have to be thinking what's going to be happening 5 years, 10 years, 30 years down the line. You get a mortgage for your house.
I'm thinking 30 generations from now,
that's what
we should think. Our present and our future. I mean, that's what we're doing. Well, that's what you and I and our guest tonight and the people who listen to this program are doing. But we have just seconds before the next break. I want to ask you a quick question with regards to pathological altruism versus outright self-hatred. So the elementary definition of self-hatred is the extreme criticism of oneself. Self-hate can feel like a person following you around all day, every day, criticizing you and pointing out every flaw or shaming you for every mistake. And this is what whites do to themselves, is absolute self-hatred, an advanced form, an advanced stage of pathological altruism, or is it just a blurry line?
Well, I think it's far more normal than truly pathological altruism. It produces it, shall we say. I mean, one of the things about white people is that we are willing to punish other white people, even at cost to ourselves. And we see that over and over again. It's a big theme in my book. I mean, I talk about the Civil War, where people were willing to make huge sacrifices for a moral ideal. And we're seeing that now with Ukraine. I was just tweeting something today, you know, that Europe is going to go through this horrible winter. They're going to freeze. They're going to starve. And it's all because of Putin. But I actually read this in the Telegraph, the British newspaper. It's good what we're doing because it's the moral thing to do.
But that's it, Kevin. The music just started. We got you for one more segment. Then we got Ramsey Paul coming up next. It's two back-to-back dynamite guests. But yes, that's a new manifestation of virtue signaling. Some Europeans would rather have a Ukrainian flag on their social media profile instead of having energy to heat their homes. We'll be right back.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Come celebrate the supreme law of the land at Loving Liberty's Constitution Day Dinner. Have you ever asked yourself, what's so great about America? Find out with guest speakers Lawrence Reed from Atlanta and Jeff Utch from Tucson, Arizona. We will also be introducing our new podcast, Ask an Immigrant. Join us Saturday, September 17th at 7 p.m. located at Liberty Hall, 3677 North 2000 West, Far West, Utah. Get your tickets today at lovingliberty.net. That's lovingliberty.net.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
One more segment with Dr. Kevin McDonald, then we will go to Ramsey Paul. It's a back-to-back powerhouse edition of TPC tonight. I want to tell you one more time, if you are a regular donor to this program, you will have received by now, if you're a domestic donor, now some of our international contributors, especially those down in Brazil and places like that, you know, we mailed out the letter this week, so you'll probably get it around Christmas time. But for everybody here in the United States, it should be in your mailbox by now. Perhaps you've already brought it into the house. If you respond, if you put a remittance in that return envelope, you're going to get this DVD double feature featuring remarks, speeches actually delivered by Sam Dixon and Kevin McDonald. And this is high quality stuff. This is a HD presentation, very sharp videography that was done. And Sam's speech was why we should be optimistic, Kevin confronting Jewish power. And so that's where we're at. And we want to get those out to you. That's why we interview Sam and Kevin so much. They have so many wonderful things to say. And now you can watch them saying it on this DVD. And we produce those in-house, and this is something that we cooked up, and you can't get anywhere else. So check out the letter. Kevin, I've got 5 questions for you, and we've got about 10 minutes remaining. So I know, and I don't want to limit your answers because they've been so wonderful, but let's, if we can, 5 minutes, 5 questions, 10 minutes, two sure. minutes apiece. Can we do that? Let's give it a shot. Here's what we got. Yep. So let me ask you this. With regards to pathological altruism, is that a condition that is heritable? Many diseases and pathologies are. There's always a discussion of nature versus nurture. But is this an inherent weakness that can be transmitted from parents? And we just talked in the last segment. This is something that didn't manifest itself until the last 50, 75 years. But is this something that is heritable, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and as I mentioned before, I mean, this really has not occurred in a vacuum. It's because of our cultural context. But yes, it would be heritable. It's like pretty much every trait that psychologists have ever studied is heritable to some extent. And for example, pathological altruism is linked to the personality system of nurturance love, where on the high end, you're really prone to being nurturant and loving. On the low end, you're prone to being a sociopath and you don't have any guilt or anything. But at the high end, you are prone to guilt. And you're, as I say, you're a nice person. You're a very loving person. You're dependent on other people, it can get too much. And again, even apart from self-hating whites, we do see pathological altruism. It's in the clinical literature that there are people who, harm themselves by helping others way too much for their own self-interest. And it's heritable for sure.
Interesting. Interesting. So I wonder what inoculated people like us from having this condition. That's a that actually leads into my next question. Keeping these tight questions and answers. If scientific investigation was still a serious discipline, what research or studies would you like to see commissioned?
Just related to, why aren't you and I that way? Well, I think in my case, I think. Both of us probably we're prone to these things, when I say heritable, I don't mean like it's a sure thing. Most of these traits are heritable. The heritability coefficient is like 0.5 at most, and that means only half the variation is genetic, half the variation is environmental. So there's plenty of room for environmental input, and when you could take. I wonder what I'd be like now if I started out in kindergarten the way it is now. I just wonder.
Sure. Well, this is the thing. I tell this story. I went to a private Christian school, and in our elementary years, we would pledge allegiance to the flag, and then we would sing Dixie. That would never happen at any school now, including the all-white Christian schools. And so, yes, I mean, if I had come up in this day and age without parents who loved me enough to tell me the truth, I mean, yeah, nature and nurture, again, who knows, and I don't want to find out.
Yeah, and it's very hard. I mean, I know when I was still at the university and I'm getting harassed and I was getting all these hateful email messages from other faculty members in the university. It was hard for me. I mean, I felt guilty. I felt terrible. People call me anti-Semite or a racist or something like that. And you just want to go into a corner or something and not socialize with anyone. Of course, they wouldn't socialize with me anyway. But the point is that, it's hard for someone like me anyway to do this. And I don't think that's true of everyone. I think some people are pretty immune to that. The person who comes to mind when I think about this is Phil Rushton, who did all the research on black white IQ differences and everything. It didn't bother him. You could scream at him, racist, whatever. It didn't do anything.
I would say certainly it has to affect everyone to some extent, to varying degrees. I mean, some people spoil for a fight a little more than others, but I don't think anybody could say, I enjoy this, but it does help when you have a community, and we have a community, and you're part of a community, of course, Kevin, of peers who have these beliefs, and all of that helps. Of that helps indeed. But this is fascinating. So you were talking just a second ago about how half of it may be heritable, half of it may be due to environment. So that leads me into this next question: are self-hating whites redeemable? And I draw a line of distinction between whites who go along to get along. They parrot the narrative because they haven't really given it much thought. They're concerned with looking out for number one, putting food on the table. They don't immerse themselves in politics or culture or discussions or anything like that. And that's a different thing, and I think those people will always just go along with the prevailing trends. So when our hands are on the levers of power, they'll fall right back in line to our way of thinking. There's a difference between people like that versus those who take to the streets and unify with the other to advance their own and our own destruction. So those are the people I'm talking about. White Antifa, whites who go out and march with Black Lives Matter terrorists, are they redeemable? And would you want these mentally flawed individuals in a hypothetical ethno-state?
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, Ed Dutton, an evolutionary psychologist, I don't know if you've had him on, but he's a very smart guy. And he's got this theory about spiteful mutants. That is that you because of all the medical advances, young children don't die from heritable diseases as they used to. And so these bad mutations accumulate. And if you look at these Antifa, I mean, they got their purple hair and they're out of shape and they look terrible. And, you know, they're mutants. And a lot of them, I think, have this hatred towards normal people and normal society that they've been excluded from for one reason or another. They're the kind of person who couldn't get a date or couldn't make it as a heterosexual. And so they become trans. And you see these, I mean, there's a very high percentage relative to the population as a whole of transsexual people, transgender people. So there's something wrong with a lot of these people that I think is independent of all that. But, our problem is basically, I told you that basically this revolution has been accomplished as a top-down kind of thing from control of the media and the educational system. Well, that's what we don't have. And if we had that, imagine Jared Taylor or you reading the evening news on a big major network. I think the world would change pretty fast because these are messages that people would naturally resonate with. And they wouldn't feel, I'm an evil person for believing this. Because after all, it's coming from CBS Evening News or something.
That's right.
I mean, that's the thing. And you talk about it. I agree. There's a lot of white people who the sort of politician types, and all they're trying to do is get reelected, and they don't really care about anything else. Or they're just trying to live a life and, go on vacation and have fun in various ways. And so they just sort of conform, and they don't want to rock the boat because there are all these costs. I mean, and they're raising the costs all the time. You get online, and you can lose your job, you lose your friends, you lose your family. And it's very, very hard. So, yeah, I mean, all the incentives, just pure incentives on the side opposed to us. And that's what happens when you grab the culture from the top and you mold it. And that's why they were so afraid of Trump, because as a president, you have a sort of bully pulpit. You can talk, you can make policies, and you can, really change things. But, we're in trouble.
Well, in some ways, we're better off than we were 5 years ago. We've talked about the different trends.
Okay,
we'll talk more about this with Ramsey Paul in the next hour.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Trump gave – this is what you're talking about, though. Trump gave people safe cover to share these things amongst their company with regards to being called a white supremacist and a Nazi and a racist or whatever they call him and whatever they call us. Trump sort of absorbed that, and hey, if they're going to call the sitting president of the United States that, then he's just saying things that we agree with, and people need the safe cover. Everybody needs to be led. I want to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that in addition to being a former professor of psychology at Cal State University Long Beach, the author of several books, Kevin also serves as the editor of TheOccidentalObserver.net, TheOccidentalObserver.net. There you'll find Frody Midyord's review of A Time to Kill, which we'll be talking about hopefully with Frody himself here in the next week or so. And also Kevin serves as the editor of the print publication, The Occidental Quarterly, and I have the true honor of working with Kevin on that publication, or at least with its distribution. I don't do the intellectual work. I do the grunt work on that. But in any way that I could be involved with Kevin, it's certainly an honor. TOQOnline.com, TOQOnline.com if you want to subscribe. Kevin, we got a minute left, and I want to ask you this question if we can squeeze it in. And this has been another wonderful interview with you, and I appreciate it, and I can't wait for the next one already. But you were a scholar who was interested in pursuing truth. Science used to be considered a search for truth. The data and the findings were to supersede beliefs and narratives that ran contrary to the facts. 1 minute remaining, what has science become now?
Oh, gosh. You know, I would hate to be a young professor in the social sciences now, because, you cannot publish anything that goes against the sort of narrative now. You know, try to get a grant that would study black-white IQ differences. It'll never happen. And if you got it, if you did that research, say you got funding or whatever, it would never get published in any kind of a reputable journal. And so it's gone really bad. It's very sad to see these professors, which is a profession that sort of prided itself on going against the grain,
That's right. I'll tell you this, only because we're running out of time and not to cut you off, but thank you for setting an example for others to follow. A man who pursued truth no matter what they threw at him, a man who serves as an example for all of us, and a man upon whose shoulders we stand. Kevin, I really appreciate and respect the hell out of you, brother. And thanks for coming back with us tonight. We'll talk to you again very soon. Ramsey Paul's on deck, and he's up next as this show continues. Kevin McDonald, the great. We'll be right back.